Lee Reich has an experimental farmden in New Paltz, New York. He's a gardener, scientist, and author. His most recent book, released by New Society Publishers, is called The Ever Curious Gardener, Using a Little Natural Science for a Much Better Garden. And Lee Reich joins us this morning to tell us about his book and some science we can use in our gardens. Good morning, Lee.
Morning.
How has this spring been going for you so far in New Paltz?
Well, I think it's similar to around there. It started late. It was long and cold, dragging out, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden spring hit. It's been warm, mostly warm, not always, but mostly warm and sunny and beautiful and really good for the plant. Not so good for vegetables because it was late getting started, but I grow a lot of fruit plants also. There's always a danger of late frost hitting them, hitting the blossoms, and this year was perfect. It stayed cool, held everything back, and then warmed up and stayed warm ever since.
Yeah, we have beautiful blossoms here right now on lots of trees, apple trees and wild plums and all kinds of things. So it's a beautiful time of year. You have a thing called a farmden. Tell us about that.
Well, I used to have a 3/4 acre, which included my house and the lawn, and I had a small garden and a few fruit trees, and that was a garden. And then I bought a field just to the south, adjacent to my property, which is 2 acres. So instead of planting, where I might have 2 fruit trees of a certain type of fruit tree, I decided, well, since I write about gardening, I should, be able to play around with things and experiment a little. So I planted 20 of that. Then there was another fruit tree. I figured, okay, I'll plant 20 of those. So, and then I put in another vegetable garden, too. So then I decided this is really more than a garden, but it's actually not a farm. So it's less than a farm, but more than a garden, so I'll call it a farmden. And that's what it is.
And it sounds like it's kind of an experimental plot for you.
Well, a lot of it is I try things out, and some things work and some things don't. And I just have to be careful not to be experimenting too much and not harvesting anything.
Right.
But so far I get a lot.
Your new book, The Ever Curious Gardener, applies science to a lot of the questions that have bugged me as a gardener, and you just don't give the hows in your book, but also the whys of some of the practices we should use in our garden. So maybe I'll just ask you a couple questions about topics.
Well, if I could just interject, the why I think is important just to understand it, but then what I was trying to really convey in the book then is here's how you can take this and you can apply it out in your garden to make a better garden.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just academic of, we can be all fascinated by plants and how they work, but here's some things that you can actually do to make them work better.
Yeah. Well, one of the things people are dealing with around here right now, just due to the time of the season, is getting plants ready to put in the garden, and that's a process most of us call hardening off. Why and how should we toughen up our seedlings?
Right. I used the example in the book that if you were spent all winter in a dark cave where the temperature, hovers around, it doesn't vary that much, and it's dark, and there's no air movement, and then all of a sudden you went out in the sunlight, you would be shocked. And basically that's sort of what happens with plants. They're inside, and there's not much wind moving their leaves, and they're watered regularly, and the temperatures are pretty moderate all the time. And then you put them outside, and they get exposed to colder temperatures, wind, sunlight, which is a lot more intense outside than even in a brightest sunny window you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So they have to be acclimated to it. Basically, it takes patience and little know-how. What you want to do is you want to get them gradually used to basically sun, wind, and maybe a little water stress. So you find some spot that's maybe dappled shade, and you put them out there. And then if it's going to get too cold, especially for tender plants like tomatoes and peppers and melons, if you have them in pots, then you got to make sure to be ready to whisk them indoors on a cold night. But basically you keep them out for a week or so in, somewhat sheltered area. And then after that, they're ready to face the great outdoors.
I have another question for you now. We've had a spring with not a ton of rain, and actually we're a few inches low on rain already this year. And one of the things you discuss in your book is how you cope with drought.
Right.
What happens to plants during drought, and how can we help them cope with that?
Yeah, well, with plants, the part of the science of it, it's interesting, is that plants lose water through little holes in their leaves called stomates, but that's also how they take in carbon dioxide to combine with sunlight, use sunlight to make photosynthesis and to grow and to get energy. So if it's a really dry time of year, but and they also lose moisture through these stomates. So if it's a dry time of year, they have to balance out keeping the stomates open so that they can take in carbon dioxide with the downside of losing water through the stomates. So the thing to do, obviously, is you can water the plants. That's the most straightforward thing. And I do go into the book about various ways of more efficiently watering plants and getting the soil ready in good shape so it can hold moisture and absorb moisture, and choosing what plants can tolerate drought best. But then there are certain plants that actually have special mechanisms for dealing with drought. Corn and other grasses, they have this type of metabolism where they can use carbon dioxide much more efficiently, so they don't have to keep their stomates open as much. And this is one reason corn actually can thrive in dry weather, whereas, cabbage plant can't. And then the other type of plants that everybody knows is succulents, which includes cacti, which, have this waxy layer and they don't have a lot of leaf area, so they can conserve water. And they also have a special metabolism that makes it that they can absorb carbon dioxide during the night, and during the day they can actually incorporate it, to make energy and structure. So plants have these various ways of dealing with it, but we as gardeners have various ways of getting plants ready for it. That hardening off also makes plants better adapted to drier conditions. But, as I mentioned in the book, adding a lot of organic matter to the soil makes soils more spongy so they can actually hold moisture. And mulching, choosing the correct plants. Over-fertilizing is one thing you don't want to do if you're going to have dry conditions, because this encourages lush growth, which makes plants lose a lot of water. And then, water conservation is important too.
You brought up soil, and all the serious farmers and gardeners that we talk to focus a lot on healthy soil. And what are some of the most important things we should pay attention to in the soil?
To me, the most important thing with soil, if I was going to look at a site for a garden, is drainage. Because if you don't have good water drainage, nothing, you can fertilize all you want, it's not going to do anything. So drainage is the most important thing. And I spent some time with that only because it is so important and it's the first thing to look at. And there are things you can do if you have poor drainage. You can actually, put drain tile in where you bury it in the soil, or put drainage ditches in, or a lot of people put their plants up on mounds. Or the other option that I think people should consider is moving your garden if you have poor drainage. So that's the most important thing is drainage. And second most, a lot of people, the first thing they think of is, well, my plants aren't growing well, I'll just throw in more fertilizer. But, if you have poor drainage, fertilizer isn't going to do any good. The next thing that most important isn't fertilizer either. It's soil pH. If the pH isn't in the right range for the plants, which for most plants, cultivated plants, is just slightly acidic, then fertilizer won't do any good in that case also. So it's really simple. You can either do it yourself with a home kit, or you can send it out somewhere to take a soil sample, test the pH, and if it's not the correct acidity, to add either limestone or sulfur to change it to make the pH either go up or down. And then I still wouldn't talk about fertilizer. Then I think organic matter, which is really... that's what put organic in organic gardening. So organic matter to me is all important, and this is basically anything that is or was living, and it feeds the microorganisms in the soil, which in turn help feed the plants. It helps with water management, as I said, in the soil. And all that biological activity also helps thwart pests. So I think these are the most important things. Besides that, I think on a garden scale, the soil is not that important, what kind of natural soil. If the drainage is good, I would not worry about the soil because it can easily be improved on a garden scale, mm-hmm. By adding the organic matter, by adjusting the pH. And so really drainage is the most important thing.
Yeah, and one of the really interesting points in your book was you talked about visiting a friend who had potted plants, and you would say either the plant had too much water or too little water, but the effect was kind of the same.
Right, right. Well, the story was that my friend Mike, he said, well, which one of my plants? It's not doing well. So I looked at it, and I said, well, you're probably not watering it enough. He said, I water all the time. So I said, well, I guess you're watering it too much then. And he, I do some garden consulting also. He said, you get paid for that? and really, the symptoms are the same, because too much water, roots need oxygen to function, and with too much water, they can't function. So basically, it's when roots aren't functioning, either from because there's no water for them to take up or because there's too much water and they can't work, you get the same symptoms in the leaves, basically drying out of the leaves, especially around the edges. And I think watering is one of the most important things in gardening. People often just look at the soil and they say, oh, it looks like it's a little too dry, so I'll water. But you really have to dig down a little to see if it's wet. And that gets to be a hassle after a while. So I always recommend you can get these moisture probes. It has a metal rod about 6 or more inches long. And these things are cheap. They're about $10 each. And you just stick it in the ground. You can't leave it in the ground, but you just stick it in the ground, and it's pretty accurate. It's not 100% accurate. And just as a dial, says, you know, very moist, very dry, or somewhere in between. And, you know, periodically in various places, you stick it in the ground, and that'll really help give you a hand on how much to water.
Now, you were talking about organic matter, and, you know, in my garden every year, we just go out to our friend's farm and we get a lot of well-rotted sheep manure and we throw that on there every year and we just plant stuff. But we till it in. And you said you don't do any tilling in your garden, and you have a whole book on weedless gardening and the no-tilling method. And you were just talking about organic matter. You don't spend a lot of time on that in this particular book, but how does that work and why does that work?
First of all, as I said, organic matter is super important in gardening. Tilling, the original reason why stopped tilling was for weed control, because when you till, you actually expose buried soil to light and buried it within any soil or lots of weed seeds, and they're just waiting for light. This is what they stay dormant, and they're just waiting for light to germinate. So by not tilling, you basically keep them from germinating, and by tilling, you're basically sowing weed seeds. So many, many years ago, it was about 30 years ago, I gave up tilling, and I haven't tilled my vegetable gardens or any of my garden soils for over 30 years, and things grow really well. And what I do is I just lay the organic matter on top of the ground. But there are other benefits to not tilling also. One is preservation of this all-important organic matter. Because when you till a soil, you add a lot of oxygen to the soil. And when you add a lot of oxygen to the soil, I mean, soil needs a certain amount of oxygen, but you're really charging them with an extra dose. And it gets so much oxygen that the combination of oxygen and the carbon in the organic matter, it burns up the organic matter. It basically becomes a carbon dioxide. So by not tilling the soil, you can raise the organic matter level very high. For instance, my vegetable gardens are about 15% organic matter, which is very, very high. So not tilling is being looked at commercially, too, now as a way to conserve organic matter, sequester carbon, keep carbon in the soil. So a certain amount of decomposition of organic matter is beneficial. This is what's feeding microorganisms and releasing nutrients. But when you till, you're just doing it too quickly, and it's sort of like putting money in a bank faster and taking it out, even if you add it. But, you know, I always like to say not tilling isn't a religion. Anything we do in gardening is a balance. It's not a totally natural system. You're not letting Mother Nature take its course, or it would be what we would consider mostly weeds. So, you know, there are just certain, you know, situations where tillage could be used, or, you know, depending on how people garden, it's not the end right. of the world, but I think there's a lot of benefits to not tilling, and it's well worth considering.
Yes.
And you don't have to till then.
And, you know, there's been a lot of work lately with livestock and that whole idea of, you know, hoofs on the ground and building soils that way too.
Right, Right, that's how it's what one thing I it sort of harkens back to the title of my book, The Ever Curious Gardener, is gardens and farms. They're really complex biological systems, and there's all sorts of things interacting. And if you do nothing except, you know, say just put seeds in the ground and, you know, do the minimum, not do nothing. If you do the minimum, you can get quite good results because these systems have evolved over so long. First of all, it's really interesting to know or to learn something about the interactions. And once you know something, you can apply it and really get even better results.
So are you experimenting with anything new this year?
I'm always trying new varieties of plants. One thing I have been doing lately, and this isn't something I thought of, like some small farmers that I know have tried it out, is using tarps in the garden in conjunction with no-tilling. So even if you don't till, I said that you don't bring up weed seeds, you have less weeds, you don't have no weeds. But by covering the soil or parts of the soil with a barrier, you know, a black barrier that doesn't emit light, say for 2 weeks, first of all, it stimulates any weed growth beneath it, and then it shades it out so they die. So I've been working with that, covering like a couple of beds in my garden, and just for a couple of weeks or more, you know, obviously beds, I'm not ready to plant yet. And actually it's been quite effective.
That sounds like it would work.
Yeah. And, you know, the various products you can get for doing that. But what I got is old billboard signs. I didn't realize they're on black vinyl on the backside. And you can get it fairly cheap. So I just bought a big sheet of it, cut it up to fit over my beds, and then put it over a few beds. And then, you know, after 2 weeks, just fold it up and put it away until next time I need it.
We are talking with author, gardener, scientist, Lee Reich, about his new book. It's called The Ever Curious Gardener. I have one more question for you, and that's about apple trees, because they're so in bloom right now. What should we be doing and not doing with our apple trees this time of year?
In bloom, you should not be spraying pesticides on them, because bees are working those blossoms. There's not much to do while they're in bloom. Right after they're in bloom, you might, if you have pest problems, you might want to start applying various sprays, and there are a number of organic sprays to control pests. And then soon after there's fruit set, you can start thinning the fruits, which is really important. If you want to make sure you get a crop next year, or a good crop next year, and if you want this year's crop to be a super high quality, people really are reluctant to pull off little fruitlets, but you should have maybe 5 to 8 inches between every fruit, and then the tree is able to pump more of its energy into the fruits that remain, and that means it could be bigger fruit, better tasting fruit, and that's called fruit thinning. Fruit thinning is very important, and you would do it right after, you know, a couple of weeks after bloom, always picking the smallest or any insect or disease damaged ones, and then in June when plants normally naturally shed a number of fruits because they've evolved to set more than they can ripen. So then they're all ready. So then they shed them, but they don't shed enough for good quality from a human standpoint. So then you got to go through the tree and pull off even more of them. Grit your teeth.
Yeah, it's kind of a compulsive, obsessive compulsive kind of a job you're describing.
I don't know. It's something you got to do.
Yeah.
Obsessive compulsive implies to me something that really you don't have to do. Fortunately, it's not needed with all fruits like cherries. I mean, you might go crazy thinning cherries because they're so small. So you don't have to do it with cherries. Mostly it's large fruits, you know, apples, peaches, pears, fruits like that that benefit from thinning.
Well, tell us where we can get your book, Lee.
So you can get it from the usual online sites and bookstores, or you can get signed copies from me by going to my website, which is Lee Reich, LeeReich.com, and you just go to the book link there. And so those are the sources for the book.
Well, thank you for talking with us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
That's Lee Reich. His new book is called The Ever Curious Gardener, Using a Little Natural Science for a Much Better Garden. It's available on Lee's website at LeeReich.com, along with lots of gardening information also there. Also his blog and a bunch of more books. So you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on Northern Community Radio, connecting you today to scientific gardening.